We live in a fantasy world now. Reality has been destroyed.
This is the time that we really need to pay attention.
The probabilities are overwhelmingly on gold's side.
That is the best environment to see gold increase its value.
Welcome to Palisades Gold Radio. I'm your host, Tom Bodrovics. Joining me today is Gareth Soloway, President and CFO and Chief Market Strategist of InTheMoneyStocks.com. How are you today, Gareth?
I'm doing really well, Tom. How are you?
Excellent. Great to have you back, and great to have a technical look at the markets here for the year ahead. So I'd like to kind of start by looking at some of the relationships that we've been seeing recently. You know, we saw Bitcoin drop fairly precipitously, and that was kind of tied to the stock market. So how is its deleveraging tied to the stock market, and what were the moves in each?
Yeah, so you're 100% right. There's absolute deleveraging that is going on in the stock market. It seems more on the institutional side at this point, which is pretty normal for markets at their highs. You know, the small investor is still buying the dip. The big money is usually the one selling into that. And you can definitely see that by looking at the S&P chart. I'll show that in just a minute. But what we have seen is Bitcoin actually topped out long before the stock market, because I think it's a riskier asset. So you had more money exiting, smart money, we could call it, exiting earlier. But there's no doubt when you see a big down day on the NASDAQ 100 or the S&P 500, you definitely see a sell-off in Bitcoin and in other cryptocurrencies. So there's definitely a deleveraging that occurs, which is very normal. If you look at the margin rates, for instance, in the market compared to history, we're basically at all-time highs from people borrowing money to invest. That's never a healthy thing, and deleveraging definitely has to come down.
Mm-hmm. So does the amount of leverage that people are using to trade always really accelerate the downside when there is a big market sell-off?
It absolutely does, because basically it's forced selling, right? So if you're leveraged to the hilt, you know, let's say in Bitcoin, right, even 10, I mean, I've heard of 100-1, but I mean, just imagine 10-1. If Bitcoin drops 10%, that account is essentially, you know, wiped out, and the broker is going to automatically sell that position in Bitcoin because they don't want to take on that risk. So it's basically that form of selling pressure where people get over leveraged and then they get margin calls, or they just get wiped out by the broker, and that selling pressure just comes in and smacks the market or smacks cryptocurrencies. Mm-hmm.
So back to that example that we were talking about, when we saw the stock market sell off a little bit and we saw Bitcoin react with, I think it was a 10% move in one day, what was the actual numbers of that correlation, Gareth?
Yeah. So thinking back to that move, you know, again, I don't remember specifically what was going on there, but it definitely all has to tie into the Federal Reserve, right? I mean, you think about the Fed saying now, hey, we're going to, you know, taper to the point where we're not putting any money into the system. Then we're also going to raise interest rates multiple times in 2022. And we're going to even cut back on our balance sheet, start unloading our balance sheet. I mean, all of these things force leverage to kind of start to come in just a bit. And again, once you see those big cap tech stocks, and that's the interesting thing with Bitcoin, it's more correlated to the NASDAQ 100, which is the higher risk stocks versus the S&P. Like, you know, the S&P has Disney in it, which is a great dividend paying stock, and other stocks like that. So it's almost a little bit protected versus the NASDAQ 100, which is high PE, high risk. And then you look at Bitcoin and you say, okay, well, cryptocurrency is high risk as well. Mm-hmm. So they're really correlated in that respect. And it's basically anything that the market deems as, you know, Federal Reserve tightening the monetary system is going to cause a deleveraging. In fact, let me show my chart here. I just want to show you guys something really cool on the S&P. So if you look at this is the SPY chart, right? And mm-hmm. and what's interesting about the SPY, we've been holding in this channel for a long, long time. And I think that is remarkable in and of itself, right? Just to be able to be in a channel of two trend lines that are parallel for such an enormous period of time. But what you can see if you really look closely is that early on in the move, you hit the lower line once, you hit it twice. Look at how much distance there was between those hits. And then you did it again. And look at again how much distance between those. And if you look at the high end, which was arguably the highest bullish side of it, you were hitting it multiple times. I mean, like all along here, and then it hit it here again. And then all along here, you were hovering. But what's interesting is look at what happened recently over the last 1 to 2 months. All of a sudden, you're getting close to the line, and then you're pulling back to the lower line, and then you're going up and you're staying further and further away from that upsloping line. And now you're hitting the downsloping line multiple times. And what that's telling you is that the trend is starting to flatten out. And the more times you hit a down, an upsloping trend line underneath, the weaker it becomes. So ultimately, what I'm expecting is that Bitcoin will follow suit, by the way, but the S&P, the NASDAQ 100 will absolutely break lower. And you will see again that translate into further downside on Bitcoin. So it's pretty wild stuff. But the market is, it's amazing how if you look at the charts, right, they have a way of kind of telling you what's coming if you know what to look for. Mm-hmm.
Like you say, it's interesting to see that kind of topping pattern that you just showed us. So, you know, on that same Bitcoin theme there, how important is the $40,000 support level at this point?
Right now that is the main one. And again, what's so interesting about the 40,000 level is, you know, the biggest support lines on a technical basis are the ones that have multiple lines converging. And check this out, is we obviously had the 40,000 level from right here, right? So if you go back to that big drop that we had down from, you know, the early in the 2021 period, that big fall to 30,000, you can connect those 30,000 lows in a flat line. And you can see that you jumped up to the 40,000 level, pulled back, up again to 40,000, pulled back, then you chopped, and again you attacked 40,000 before breaking out to the upside. So that tells you that this was resistance, resistance, resistance. It then came back into support, and it's at support again. But what's interesting about this is just what I mentioned, is that's just one trend line, right? So if we now look at something else here, take a look at this trend line. In fact, let me zoom out on my chart just a little bit and show you this line. If you take the low from the beginning of the move in 2020 and you start a trend line there and connect it through the low right here in July of 2021, look at what happens. You extend it all the way out and it comes right to that level. So now what you have is you have this flat line, which we talked about at 40,000, and you have this one right here. And again, the converging lines, that's what gives you so much major support. Now, do I think it's going to break at some point? Yes. But the question is, when can it bounce higher, maybe to 46,000, maybe to 50,000? But ultimately, I do want people to understand is that everything that I'm seeing in the markets, the deleveraging is going to continue as long as the Federal Reserve continues to say that they're going to deleverage. So, or essentially, as long as the Fed says they're going to continue to tighten monetary supply. So just be aware of that, is that you can watch the Federal Reserve. Now, if the Federal Reserve blinks, and all of a sudden the economy weakens and they start to say, okay, well, we're only going to raise interest rates once in 2022, then the risk on trade comes back in with a flurry. And if Bitcoin's still above 40,000 at that point, I think it could go back to the highs very, very quickly. Mm-hmm. I don't expect that to happen because I think inflation is something that's going to be around for quite some time though.
So Gareth, if we see the tapering happen and the rates actually rise, is the NASDAQ piece that you mentioned and Bitcoin, are those a good, let's say, corner of the market to look at to show us the start of the reaction of the market to that tightening of those monetary conditions?
Oh yeah. And what's really remarkable about it is that if you look at a lot of the NASDAQ stocks, kind of the second tier, so we're not talking about Apple, the $1 trillion names, but if you look at the second tier ones, you can see that there's been a lot of stocks that have already been absolutely annihilated. I mean, in fact, believe it or not, some of these are actually getting to levels where they almost start to make sense in terms of swing trades to the long side. So again, deleveraging has gone on in the market for quite a bit of time, going back to really 2021 early in the period. And again, this is just one stock, Fastly, but you could look at like AI, which is an artificial intelligence company. I mean, look at the drops on these things. These things made highs around $180. It's now sub $30. And even some other ones, I'm trying to think of some other ones that we've been playing lately in terms of swing trades, but they really are remarkable. These technology names that have absolutely been annihilated. And again, just a couple things on that is that, you know, the reason why the markets, the NASDAQ, for instance, is only down 10% from its highs, the S&P, I think, is only down 5 or 7%, is because the $1 trillion names that have such an epic weighting, like an Apple, for instance, they are only slightly off of their all-time highs. Mm-hmm. So again, when you have companies, like five companies make up 50% or 60%, you know, 40 or 50% of the NASDAQ 100, those companies, unless they start to fall, are going to keep the indexes close to their highs. But the underlying, you would kind of say the weakness is showing in the underbelly of the market here with so many of these stocks that have just been absolutely crushed.
And that can really signal a real risky environment when there's so much wealth concentrated in few companies like that, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's great on the upside, right? I mean, it kept on driving the market to new all-time highs, and it's fantastic when it's good. But you have to remember, you got to take the good with the bad, which is then when it reverses, which inevitably it will, then things can get really, really ugly. And what'll be interesting to see is that, you know, you have a lot of stocks that have been beaten up so substantially. Do those put in bottoms before the names like Apple and Microsoft do? And Microsoft, interestingly enough, has started to crack, right? So Microsoft is already, you know, there were days where it was falling tremendously last week and the week before. It's still relatively close to its all-time highs. But I mean, you're starting to see these big cap techs start to deleverage quite a bit. And one of the issues that I have is that, you know, the names like Microsoft, Apple, Amazon, there's a huge hedge fund and pension funds out there, and they all put the same stocks in their portfolios, right? Which is great, just like we talked about when the market's going up. But what happens when they all say, oh my goodness, we got to unload, you know, $1 billion of Apple, and you have, you know, 50 companies that say that or something like that. That's where things can get really scary. And I do think that that's coming, unfortunately. Mm-hmm.
So Gareth, how do you see interest rates affecting the market this year, and how could the Fed ultimately lose control of them?
Yeah, so I mean, I'm not sure if the Fed is close to losing control just yet. Mm-hmm. I think that could be something that occurs down the line. So the way I see it playing out in 2022 here is that, you know, you already have the Fed tapering. Tapering should be done by March. And then I do think the Fed comes in with at least one rate hike. But what I'm thinking is going to happen, and this is, again, speculation, but knowing the history of the markets, and I still vividly remember 2018 when the Fed started to hike and the markets dropped 20% in 6 weeks. But my guess is the market will throw a tantrum, like a little kid, right? Just throwing a tantrum, because the market has gotten accustomed to the Fed giving in anytime they do. Mm-hmm. So at some point, probably in the process of hiking interest rates once or twice this year, the markets will be down 20%+. And then my guess is the ripple effect of that will come through the economy. So you have this wealth effect that people have been loving, which has kept the economy going. That's going to be taken away. And now you'll have kind of the loss effect, the negative of that. And then you have the translation of, if people are buying less goods, then companies are selling less, they have to start laying off people. And we know the Fed dual mandate is unemployment inclusive. And so they're going to have to say, okay, well, unemployment just went up to 7%, let's say. We now have to come back and say, okay, we're going to now stop hiking interest rates, maybe even do some new monetary fiscal stimulus. So I just can't imagine the Fed can really go that aggressively and raise interest rates. I even heard some, you know, like, I don't know if it was Goldman or JP Morgan, but they were saying maybe 6 or 7 rate hikes. I would be floored if that happens. I think that the 10-year yield maybe gets to 2.25% this year. And I think that's tops, because the Fed will come out with bazookas again and start to stimulate the economy. Now, what you're talking about is longer term, the Fed losing control. That will eventually happen. At some point when they've printed so much money and the global countries lose faith in the dollar, maybe the digital yuan starts taking the place as a reserve currency, there will be a point where the flood of money gets out of control and the interest rates ignore the Federal Reserve.
Gareth, you have alerted us in the past to some non-traditional companies, let's say. So what interests you at the moment for some plays that seem very undervalued in, let's say, China or some of the emerging markets?
Yeah, so definitely that's kind of where a lot of my money is starting to flow right now. And even into the end of the year, I was accumulating names like Baidu and Alibaba. I'm trying to look for best of breed. And I'm trying to think about if money, when the interest rates were so low and the Fed was just pumping literally $1.5 trillion into the system each and every year through stimulus, and then you had the government sending out checks that people were investing, so much money flowed into the U.S. to invest in the U.S. because we were the best out of the, you know, of anywhere. But now you have to look and say, okay, monetary, you know, policy is getting more hawkish. you know, investing in the US is not going to be as good. So I'm thinking money is going to start to flow out and look for other places to invest. And I'm looking at like names like China, like I just said, Alibaba, Baidu, you know, kind of sticking with best of breed because there still is some risk there, no doubt about it. But even stocks in Brazil are starting to look interesting to me. But again, the idea is with the Chinese stocks, they've been beaten up so much because of this regulation. And I do think, especially with the Olympics coming up, the Chinese government has really stepped back. And to me, it's a very interesting area to invest in at this point for potentially doubles in a lot of those stocks.
And is that just because they are so beaten up at this point and you're just looking at the chart and seeing great buying opportunities?
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt about it. You know, you look at Alibaba, which has the biggest consumer potential, you know, abilities out there, even more than Amazon. And you look at the chart of that, compare it to Amazon or compare it to Apple. And here, I can throw it up right here, but you see the drop. I mean, this thing was trading in 2020 north of 300, and it basically bottomed out close to $100. And this is just going to be a powerful moneymaker, you know, irregardless of all the regulation that China's doing. I mean, China doesn't want to destroy its companies. It's just trying to kind of, you know, make it so that they don't have the same problems as the US with Google and Facebook kind of dominating and some of these companies dominating as much. But when you think about 1.5 billion Chinese consumers, I mean, it's just a massive potential upside here on names like this. So when I see beaten down stocks that are, you know, trading at levels not seen since 2018 or 2017, and they're quality names like this, I mean, just imagine if you got a chance to buy Apple at $50 again, you know, that's the kind of the equation that I'm using at this point. So there's definitely value there. It's not to say that, please understand, anyone listening, I'm not saying, you know, go all in, right? You have to be diversified. You have to understand the risks of investing in China, but you are getting some opportunities here that could pay off very nicely.
Gareth, considering that we're just in the kind of the first half of January here, do you try to take into account tax loss selling season and how do you use it to your advantage?
Yes, it's one of my favorite things to do, right? So I call it the January effect, right? Where you have these stocks that have been kind of losers all year long, you know, between November and the end of December, people are saying, okay, well, the market was a great year. I took this many profits, but I really don't want to pay, you know, 200,000, you know, or on 200,000 in gains. So where can I sell something into year end where maybe I'm down 50,000 or 100,000 on these positions, and then I only have to pay taxes on $100,000 of gains. And so you see this extra selling into year end. The great thing about it is that once January 1st comes, I look at it and I say, okay, well, if anyone was going to sell, they were going to use the tax loss selling, right? That was the obvious way to do it. So it tells you that in January, there's going to be this zero effect or very few sellers in a stock that's been beaten up. And it's been beaten overly because of that tax loss selling. So for instance, I mean, some of the great bounces that we've seen here, I mean, look at what Viacom's done just in this year. And let me put up that chart because this was one of my favorites going into the year. And you can see, I mean, remember last year it got caught up in that hedge fund deleveraging event. And then all year long, and then look at into like November into December where it really slipped down. That to me was all tax loss selling. And then what happens in January so far, the stock basically went to its pre-November levels right here. And again, in terms of percentages, $28.50, $29 at the lows in December, it's now back to 36 and change. I mean, percentage-wise, for holding something for a month, that is a remarkable move. And the same thing could be said for Discovery, right? I mean, same chart, beaten down. Amazing that it had this long-term trend line. Look at that trend line. How cool is that? Just to see how it actually came down and touched that trend line. And then look at the rip that it's had in January. So for those of you out there, you know, every December, I always make a list of my top January effect plays. And they're usually plays that have been losers all year. They're companies that are good quality companies, but they're seeing a lot of tax loss selling. And then I usually buy it right at the end of December or right at the start of January. And it's one of the better investment opportunities every year.
Interesting. So Gareth, as we saw last week, the highest CPI print for many years, how do you see gold taking this into account, as many believe and have said that it's a great inflation hedge?
Yeah, so gold to me is somewhat of an inflation lag. And again, I've gone back to the 70s period and I've looked at this and it happened the same way. So in the early, like 75 to 78, gold didn't perform great, even though inflation was, you know, it was closing in on 10% during the early part of that inflation period, 75 to 78. And then all of a sudden it had this monster rip in the late 70s into the 80s, which was just an astronomical move to the upside. And I'm really thinking that's the kind of the play that we're going to see here, where I do expect gold to finally start to break out due to this inflation. And what's kind of cool here, you can see this chart on gold. This is you could see that you had this huge move up from 2019 to 2020. And then so it was a basic 1 year move up. And then for 1 year now, or a little over a year, we've gone into a consolidation pattern. And again, if you look at it, you know, it's not like we're all the way back down to those pre-move levels. You've just been consolidating in the top 50% of the up move, and you have this beautiful wedge pattern forming here. So I'm expecting a breakout above the wedge. And then you should go right back to this 2075 high on gold. And I actually think you go much, much higher than that this year. And I think that, again, the breakout is very, very close. Maybe even within the next couple months, you'll see this breakout of this wedge pattern. But again, you know, I just always just kind of bring myself back to remind myself that, you know, the more money they print, that means that should eventually equate to a higher gold price. And the way stocks and commodities move, it's usually in fits and starts, right? You'll see something that's just kind of is dead. And then all of a sudden it makes up for what it should have done for the last year and just rips up in a huge move. And it's just people piling into that trade when it breaks out. So I do think gold is a great opportunity here. I actually think it'll be a better performer this year than Bitcoin, as well as stocks, or as well as not all stocks, but the stock market.
So do you think that, you know, that period from 2018 to 2019, where we did see that big move in gold, do you think that could be gold, you know, in a way sensing and accounting for inflation before it occurred?
Yeah, I do think so. I do think that that's probably somewhat of it. It all coincided with, you know, the Fed at that point. I mean, the move actually started in kind of late 2018 into 2019. And what we saw is, remember, the Federal Reserve started to really get dovish again when they tried to raise interest rates and they backed off, right? So the Fed was kind of in this position of saying, okay, well, we're going to start to tighten here. Gold was just going sideways. And then the market dropped 20%. And then all of a sudden people were like, wait a minute, the Fed just basically told us that if the market freaks out, they're going to reverse course and print as much money as we need. So it makes sense that that would have an impact to the upside on gold. And gold had an amazing move. In fact, I'm looking at the chart. In 2018, gold was, you know, $1,160, and it ran all the way up to 2075-ish. So, I mean, that's a huge move, $900 or so. My guess is the next move will be somewhat of a what we call a measured move. So you would look at that same size move and project that out. So another $900 to the upside, you know, that puts us, you know, 2700 at least.
Mm-hmm. As you're talking about, you know, the market really reacting to the Fed's moves here, considering their reaction to COVID in March of 2020, does the high inflation now constrain them far more in their options of what they can do to save the market in the event of a sell-off here?
Yeah, in the event of a near-term sell-off, it does, right? And again, you know, there's a lot of Americans that are, I mean, just going to the store, I'm sure we've all experienced it, is just, you know, the prices have just gone up so, so much. It's really remarkable. And that does hurt middle income and lower income. And again, you know, I said before that I think when Biden reappointed, Chairman Powell, he specifically said, I'm going to reappoint you, but you have to tackle inflation because I got my midterm elections and I need people to see that we're attacking this, since a lot of my voting base is that middle and lower income population. So I think that in the near term is the worst. So you have to look at it like what the Fed looks and says, okay, well, which one's worse right now? And right now, definitely inflation is hurting more. Now, if all of a sudden you see a stock sell-off and unemployment goes up to 10 or 15 or 20%, now, which ones is the boogeyman, right? Which one do they want to attack at that point? And my guess is that's what's going to happen, is that they're going to have to start shifting back. And maybe at that time, inflation comes back in a little bit. Maybe it's only 4% and they can say, okay, well, we definitely have to attack unemployment because it's much worse at this point versus the telltale, which one's worse.
Mm-hmm. So does silver look, you know, about the same here as gold to you, Gareth, or is silver kind of waiting for gold to take the lead?
Yes, silver, I think, you know, the tricky thing with me on silver is just that you have the industrial side of silver. So silver's chart pattern is actually very good as well. It has a little bit further to go for a breakout. So you can see here, again, you have a beautiful bull flag developing. It's at the lower end of it, though. So it has a little bit more to go to really break to the upside. But again, for me, it's one that I'm sitting on the sidelines on just because I do worry that the economy, if it starts to sputter in the face of a sell-off in the in the stock market, the Fed tightening, then you have the industrial side of silver maybe drawing it down, priced down just a little bit. But again, if you have a five-year horizon, silver is probably much, much higher at that point due to the money printing. It's just in the near term that I'm trying to look for where I want to enter it. And I do have a level here. So, I mean, if we were to get one more sell-off in silver, this $19 level, 19 and a quarter level is just massive, massive support. And this, I would absolutely start accumulating down here. So I am on the sidelines. I'm long gold. I'm long gold miners at this point, Newmont Mining, a few other ones as well. But for silver, I'm still sitting on the sidelines just because I'm just not sure the price action just yet.
Mm-hmm. So when you mentioned Newmont, Gareth, is there just simply a technical pattern that you're seeing in that chart that makes you like that? Or is it from a fundamental reason as well?
Yeah, it's really just more of a technical analysis side. So again, Newmont has much the same chart. In fact, I can pop that chart up for us. You basically have that same sideways consolidation. I like the fact that you've held this pivot low here, which actually extends right back to here as well. And again, you're kind of in that same consolidation move here. But again, it gives me that exposure. I'm buying in at the low end here. This is kind of where I entered right down here, where I have a lot of upside just to get to resistance. It's on support and the bull flag is fully intact. So it's just basically giving me another avenue of exposure to what I think is coming in gold and in the metals over the longer term. Absolutely.
Excellent, Gareth. Is there anything else you'd like to go over before we wrap up here?
You know, for the most part, I think people just need to expect 2022 to be much more volatile. I think the Fed kept, the VIX, for instance, volatility down over the last few years because of the amount of stimulus. It was always kind of the cushion in the underbelly of the market. So you got to be ready for more volatile moves. I think 1-2% daily moves is going to be much, much more common. And then I think just be ready to trade. It's going to be more of a trader's market. I don't think people that are buying and holding will make as much money as they're used to from the last 5 years. And then lastly on Bitcoin, I think, again, eventually Bitcoin breaks lower. I did want to mention that I did launch a new website just for cryptocurrencies where we trade cryptocurrencies. It's verifiedinvestingcrypto.com. And again, it's an awesome place. We've had great success in swing trading, purely technical. There's so many hypers out there. This is a pure technical thing, just like all my chart analysis is. So please, you know, check that out if you guys are interested.
Excellent, Gareth. How about some longer term, let's say by the end of 2022, targets for gold and silver here?
So I would say the low end target for me is around 26 to 2700 on gold. I think high end could be close to 3000. That would be kind of the bullish case that you could come up with, but that is a possibility. I know it's a huge move, but it definitely has potential there. And then I think on silver, I would just look for silver, be a buyer at 19 or right around 19. And I think silver, again, over the, it's hard to know time-wise, but I wouldn't be surprised if silver has a move north of, you know, really, I think, again, at some point, you're going to see a move up to close to $50 on silver. So, I mean, there's some good opportunities out there. I would be definitely more focused on the metals and foreign stocks. I'm more short U.S. equities right now. And then just, again, look for those cues from the Federal Reserve.
Excellent, Gareth. Well, we really appreciate those targets. And hopefully we have something good to look forward to this year.
Thank you, Tom. Thanks for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Always great to speak to you, Gareth. Thank you.
This podcast is for general informational purposes only. Nothing on this podcast should be taken as investment advice. Guests on this show are not compensated for their appearance. Listeners are urged to educate themselves and make their own decisions. Do not base any investment decisions on the information contained. To view our full disclaimer, please visit our website.